Chapter 2. They left at dawn, heading north from the bastion, travelling at close to top speed for several hours. Ghazan was on his bike. In the land speeder Storm were Kusala and the four scouts, Tekusal, Arik, Bokegan, and Yekejin. Day on the moon was a smear. Visibility was poor, thanks to a perpetual ground fog that was knee-height over much of the land, but rose as high as 3 meters in patches. The orc army, though, was easy to spot. Ghazan and Kusala slowed their vehicles when they saw the green-skinned horde appear over the horizon. They veered east, giving the orcs a wide berth. The land had more pronounced rolls in that direction, and they were able, as they drove over the hilltops, to observe the size of the green-skinned force and vox a report back to Temur. The numbers were greater yet, but there were no tanks. There were no vehicles of any kind.
"I wish those were glad tidings," the Khan told them.
Ghazan agreed. In the initial stages of the first assault, there had been no sign of tanks, and then suddenly they had been there.
"Well, they're not hauling them down the road with them," Kusala observed. "That much we know now."
The greenskin army stretched for kilometers. Its clamor reached further yet. The moon's day was filled with the yells and laughter and crude songs of the beasts. The cacophony of the voices was backed by the beat of thousands of trudging feet and the clanking of weapons and armor. It sickened Ghazan to think that he was looking at another nomadic army. That there should be any parallel between the orcs and the culture of Chogoris was obscene. But the distorted, monstrous suggestion of the familiar was before him. It underscored the need to exterminate these Xenos. But his fight was not with that army, not with those orcs, not now. Half an hour after they left the marching horde behind, bike and speeder climbed a ridge, then stopped. Before them was a wide plain that had been transformed by the orcs' presence.
"I do not like to credit the greenskins with genius," Sergeant Kusala muttered over the vox. "But the bastards can make our life hell without even trying."
The plain had been turned into a refuse dump, covering hundreds of hectares. Broken and half-finished vehicles and tons of scrap metal covered the area. The fog eddied over and between the detritus, concealing and revealing jagged edges, senseless assemblages, and endless, endless waste. Scattered irregularly were much larger piles of cast-offs, some of them the size of low hills. Smoke rose from fissures between the debris and from exhaust pipes poking out like toxic weeds. There was a deep, arrhythmic beat that Ghazan could feel coming up from the ground. It was strong enough that he could see the contours of his bike vibrate slightly in time. Now and then, flame would belch up from the plain. There was no consistency, though. Ghazan didn't see the burn-off emerge from the same spot twice.
"How did they do this so quickly?" Tegusal wondered. "Or have they been here longer than we thought? Is this deliberate?"
"Does it matter?" Bokegan asked. "It exists. Now we have to deal with it."
"Brother Tekusal's questions are relevant," Ghazan said. "If the orcs have been here longer than we thought, that means they hid successfully. That means they planned. There is already considerable evidence for this. They established their heavy armor facility on an uninhabited moon, giving them plenty of opportunity to build up their arsenal unmolested before they attacked Lepidus Prime. Do those actions sound like the familiar tactics of orcs?"
Tegusal began. on Armageddon,
Kusala cut him off.
We are not fighting that enemy. There cannot be two orcs in the galaxy like that.
Still, Ghazan said, this is unusual. And in close combat, these orcs seem more resilient.
Stormseer, Kusala said, do you have any good news to bring to the table, or is the galaxy already doomed?
Ghazan smiled. He gestured at the view before them. Well, Brother Sergeant, there can be little doubt that the Greenskins are producing their vehicles somewhere here. Said Kusala. The grunted syllable might have been amusement, or it might have been displeasure. With the sergeant, it was often both.
They're building the tanks underground, Arik said.
Yes,
said Kusala.
But where? Everywhere?
A gout of flame appeared at the base of the descent to the plain. It vanished. A moment later, another appeared, 100 meters further in.
No industry should work like this.
Nothing about the Greenskins should work the way it does, Ghazan said. It is pointless, perhaps even dangerous, to try to reason it out. We must accept that it is so and deal with its reality.
All very true, Stormseer,
Kusala answered.
And all very well. That doesn't help us, though. We cannot be sure of destroying everything beneath the surface without deploying cyclonic torpedoes.
We are here to reclaim the system, not destroy it, Ghazan said.
Exactly.
Where do we begin to look?
Arik asked.
Near the bigger piles? Degusal suggested.
Kusala thought for a moment, then nodded.
There has to be some way in. Those are as likely spots as any.
Ghazan agreed. The tug of fate was stronger yet. The battle was waiting for him, underground. He was not close enough yet, in time or in space, to know more precisely where to find the enemy. There were no orcs visible on the surface. Kusala decided to favor mobility over stealth, so they kept to the vehicles and rode down onto the plain. They started with the nearest hill of debris, about 200 meters to the northeast of their position. They circled it twice. There was no entrance, nor did they see any means by which the discarded metal had arrived here in the first place. They moved on to the next hill, with no better luck. As they reached the third, not far from the center of the plain, there was a shrieking grind of gears. It came from beneath the surface, a few meters away from the north face of the heap. The hill began to shake. Slag tumbled down the slope. The lower portion of the mound heaved, and a trapdoor rose on hydraulic lifts. A maw, the size of a Thunderhawk troop compartment, gaped. The interior was a throat descending beneath the surface of the plain. From within came the screech of metal against metal. Ghazan and Kusala steered bike and storm around the curve of the hill and killed the engines. They kept the weapons pointed towards the entrance.
Did they spot us? Yekijin asked.
We'll know in a moment, Kusala answered. Do not fire without my order.
They watched a treaded vehicle crawl out from the interior. It was loaded down with scrap. It was followed by another, then a third. They were driven by grots. The diminutive greenskins had become permanent parts of the machines. The creature's legs had been amputated, and their torsos emerged from the center of the guidance mechanisms. The ends of their arms had been fused with the gears and steering wheels. They were almost servitors, except servitors did not howl and complain about their fate. The grots did. Their litany of injustice continued without pause as they drove up the hill. The box of each truck tipped to the side. The dumped loads ran down the hill, creating a small avalanche of metal. The vehicles then backed up. They disappeared once more into the moor. Filthy smoke billowed out as the door lowered itself shut again. Debris continued to tumble down the side of the heap, covering the door once more with accidental camouflage.
"Well," said Tegusal, "I suppose that's one way in. It might be a way directly into one of their infernal machines," Kusala said. "It is certainly not used by the warrior greenskins. Better to find out how they get in and out."
He pointed to the door.
"Note this location, though. We may yet have to use it."
"The other debris hills are likely more of the same," said Gazan. The sergeant nodded.
"Then we proceed on foot."
He looked around.
"This is close enough to pass for the center. We start here."
20 meters away, there was a pile of discarded vehicle parts. With the addition of a camo net, the bike and the storm blended in with that confusion of metal. The Space Marines began a search that moved out in a spiral from the hill. The hunt felt like drudge work. The orcs had forced them into a humiliating slog through industrial offal. There were no options. The entrances to the complex, if that was what it was, beneath their feet, could be doors or something as simple and lazy as holes in the ground. They would be hard to spot. Maybe the orcs were hiding them, but it could also be that the greenskins simply weren't bothering to mark them.
"Here," Arik called.
He had found a chute. There was a rough ladder leading down into the depths.
"Right," said Kusala. "Let's see what sort of damage we can do."
He started down the rungs. Gazan waited as the other scouts followed the sergeant. He frowned at the opening. He could have expected to feel something if he was moving closer to his fated appointment. Something as simple as rising heartbeats or an intensified anticipation. He did not. Somehow, this route was not getting him closer to where he needed to be. He saw no better possibility for the moment, though, so he descended after the scouts. The chute ended in a passage that appeared to have been blasted out as quickly as possible. Its width varied every 10 meters or so, making it more like a series of linked caves than a tunnel. The floor was littered with bits of assembly. The scouts used beam lamps to illuminate the passage, though empty fixtures on the walls suggested there had once been lighting here. The tunnel led to a larger cavern where there were even more bits of incomplete war machines. They looked like they had been on their way to being eccentric variations of tanks and had been abandoned because they did not work, or their creators grew bored. On the far side of the derelict workshop was another tunnel from which came the noise of machinery. Gazan looked down the short passage. The clanking grew louder. After a few minutes, he saw a grot-driven trash hauler arrive. It paused a moment as if waiting to receive an addition to its load, then moved on.
"This doesn't connect to anything except their disposal system," he said.
Kusala joined him at the passageway.
"Then it seems we are fated to take that route."
Gazan winced at the sergeant's use of fated. It was wrong.
"No," he thought, "not this way."
"That will not serve," he said.
Kusala turned to face him.
"Why not? Clearly construction is going on at the other end of that line."
Gazan shook his head. The tug of destiny was suddenly strong, and it was pulling him away from this path.
"That may be so, but it is not what we seek."
Kusala answered slowly, choosing his words with care.
"The Khan gave us," he gestured to his scouts, "the mission of pinpointing
and if possible, sabotaging the Greenskin Manufactorum. Do you know something, Stormseer, to suggest this route will not take us to our target?
Now Ghazan was cautious as he answered. Though he outranked Kusala, he did not want to put him in the position of having to choose between two contradictory sets of orders. But there was no question of taking this path. In this, he did not believe he was being selfish. If the struggle he faced was so formidable that it sent ripples from the future to the present, then it would have an importance that went beyond the personal.
Yes, he said, if we go this way, we will not reach our goal.
Kusala paused a long while. His face was concealed behind his helmet, but Ghazan could guess the doubts written on it. He could see them in the expressions of the scouts as they waited for a decision. Finally, Kusala said,
Are you aware of an alternative?
I am not.
Then
not yet. Give me a few minutes, Brother Sergeant. Will you do that?
Of course, Zadyen Arga.
The respect due to Ghazan's position permitted no other response.
Thank you.
Ghazan wasn't sure if Kusala was aware of the friction between himself and the Khan, but he wanted the sergeant to know that he did not take his cooperation for granted.
This is necessary, he added.
Kusala nodded, noncommittal. He stayed where he was. Ghazan left the others and retraced their steps to the chute and climbed back to the surface. He stood in the center of the orc's landscape of waste and turned around slowly. He stopped looking for a logical point of entry. There would be none, not in the normal sense of logical, not with the greenskins. The chambers below were proof of that. How many other semi-discreet workshops would they find if they kept looking? Some might be occupied, some not. Kusala was right that following the disposal line would bring them to an active facility. But if the manufactorum was spread out in bits and pieces in haphazard fashion underneath the full expanse of this plain, the White Scars could be searching for days and find nothing of any strategic value. There were great questions here, not just where the tank construction facilities were, but how the tanks were arriving at the battlefield. If the vehicles were being built here, how were they leaving? Shouldn't there be a steady stream of them emerging from the ground at some point? No. The answers were stranger and deeper. They had to be. Surely that was why he had been called here. The being he must fight was tied to those answers. He kept turning, letting the details of the plane blur into an impressionist continuum of debris. He opened himself to the warp, feeling the currents of the possible and the inevitable. He could not read the future, but he could feel its undertow, and he could sense the gathering density of the potential seeking to become the enacted. He reached out to the land. He spoke to its spirit. Its suffering must be great, wounded and abused as it was by the orcs. We have come to free you of them, he told it. He sought the worst injury, the nexus of greatest harm. The answer came in the form of an instinct. He stopped turning. He found that he was staring at a spot about 100 meters away, further to the northwest. There was no landmark that he could see. He kept his eyes fixed on the location as he began to walk towards it. Sergeant Kusala, he voxed, I think I may have found something. He became more certain as he drew closer. There was nothing to confirm his instinct. There was only that growing certitude. It was enough. It fed on itself. He realized his lips had pulled back into a grim smile. He stopped. There was still nothing to see, but this was the spot. He began tossing scrap metal aside as the scouts joined him. He looked up at Kusala.
"Right here," he said. "Our path begins here."
Kusala was motionless for a moment.
"Stormseer," he said. "There is nothing but more waste here."
"No, there is something. We have to dig a bit further, that's all."
The sergeant's tone had been flat, respectful, but his doubts were growing stronger. Ghazan was sorry for it, but not insulted. Kusala and his squad helped with the dig. The scrap was deeper here. They kept going down and had not reached the ground yet. Ghazan realized this was a declivity in the plain, smoothed out by the volume of rubbish. This, he thought, was camouflage. This entrance was too perfectly hidden. Here was more worrying evidence of something greater than cunning on the part of these orcs. The earth shook. There was a single hard jerk. It almost knocked the white scars off their feet. More debris slid down the heaps. The air was filled by the sound of thousands of torn sheets of metal scraping against each other. The shock wave was visible, the shadow of a ripple as it travelled beneath the plain. Then the earth stilled. Metal settled with a rusty chorus.
"What was that?" said Tegusal.
"The reason we are here," Ghazan answered.
He reached down, grabbed a sheet of metal that looked as if it had been intended as a door, and hurled it away. Beneath it, a hatch, 3 meters across, was set into the rock of the plain. There was no visible way to open it. But there it was, the true door concealed by a false discarded one. Kusala examined the hatch.
"Only to be used from the inside," he said.
Then the vox sprang to life. Their Khan was calling. The reprieve was over.
"No," Ghazan thought. Even before he heard Temur's demand, he knew that he would refuse it.
At the head of the Fifth Brotherhood, the engine of his bike snarling its hunger for Zeno's blood, Temur Khan rode out from the bastion to meet the orcs. The White Scars had had ample warning this time. The green-skinned foot soldiers were hours away when the report had come in from Kusala. Temur had the position of the orcs and the time and the distance to savage them utterly. The entire mounted brotherhood was part of the attack, the 6 bike squads and the 5 land speeders. The assault squad was carried by the surviving Thunderhawk, the Karjog's stand. What raced towards the orcs was nothing as mundane as a mere opposing force. It was war and wind combined. The sudden change on the battlefield, the flash of fortune's reversal, the decapitating blow of surprise, all of these things were embodied in the charge of the White Scars. The tribes of Chogorus had followed a tradition of combat for millennia. The technology had changed. The philosophy had not. The enemy was shattered, not by overwhelming numbers or impregnable armor. It was speed and the terrifying momentum that came with it that routed the foe. It was lightning, not thunder, that was lethal. Even so, the Fifth Brotherhood came with thunder. They eschewed the land raiders and rhinos that were the mainstay of other chapters of the Adeptus Astartes, so the deep growls of the heavy vehicles were absent. But the snarl of land speeders and bikes in such numbers was monstrous. The air itself turned feral. The White Scars were a storm flying over the land, and it would flatten everything in its path. The wind rushed at the green tide, It came to break the waves, to turn them back. It would blow so hard that it would show that a tide could be stopped after all. Temur Khan did not believe in comforting illusions. He knew when he saw the orc mob stretching out for kilometers that he was here to perform a miracle. So be it. He knew what he and his battle brothers could do. He closed the distance with the orcs, the landscape a streak in his peripheral vision, and he laughed.
"Behold the green skin numbers,"
he called out over the Vox's company channel.
"Do they imagine that will make any difference to us? All they have done, brothers, is ensure that each of us may quench his thirst for Xenos' blood this day. Destroy them! For the Khan and the Emperor!"
The orcs started shooting as soon as they saw the Space Marines. For the first few seconds, the range was too great. Then the gunfire became something to take seriously. The orcs were not marksmen, but they didn't need accuracy when they had volume. The caliber of most of the bullets could do little against power armor, but the vehicles were vulnerable. Speed was the answer here, too. The orcs couldn't get a fix on targets moving that fast. Temur kept the Thunderhawk's heavy arsenal in reserve for now. The White Scars struck as a series of spearheads. Temur's bike squad hit first, killing the orcs at a distance with bolter fire and then driving hard into the center of the lines and moving forward to cut the march in half. As the orcs' resistance stiffened, the squad broke to the left and right, slicing through the green-skinned flanks and out. Next came the land speeders, plunging the knife deeper into the enemy's heart. And when they veered off, the next wave of bikes followed on. By then, Temur and his squad were harassing the periphery of the horde as they looped back for another run. The White Scar's attack was a perpetual shock. The orcs reeled. They were hit in the center and on the sides simultaneously, and they were unable to get a fix on one group of Space Marines before it had moved on and another was renewing the charge. The Bastion's plateau was barely visible over the horizon. The orcs' advance ground to a halt, and bit by bit, the White Scars crushed them to pulp. When it came, Temur didn't see or hear the disaster. It happened on ground hidden by the gentle swell of the landscape. From the perspective of the battlefield, nothing had changed for the Bastion. Temur wasn't even looking in that direction. He was focused on the next group of greenskins about to go down under his wheels and be shredded by his guns. The White Scars were tearing the enemy apart, moving so fast that the orcs had yet to claim a single kill, unless it was their own kin, as they fired indiscriminately in all directions. The Fifth Brotherhood had absolute control over the battlefield, and yet Temur knew that it had all gone wrong. Something had changed. Perhaps the corner of his eye caught the flash of energy discharge in the distance, back towards the base, as he began his turn once again to drive through the orcs' disintegrating front lines. Perhaps it was something as simple as premonition. But his heart was already sinking when Colonel Meixner was suddenly on the Vox. "Multiple heavy armor units inbound from the north," he said. "Six of them. They'll be at the foot of the plateau in minutes." From the north? Temur wanted to roar at the impossibility. How could the tanks have bypassed them? Yet they had. And now his entire force was hours away from the bastion that was in immediate danger. The army of thousands of orcs, the army that he was shattering, now looked like a decoy. The idea that he might have been outmaneuvered by orcs was an obscenity that robbed Temur of words.
It took him several more moments of outraged killing before he was able to answer Meixner.
Hold fast, Colonel.
We plan to, Meixner answered, clipped and assured, and fooling neither of them about the odds against six of the Orcs' war machines. Temur turned sharply, cutting his advance short. The rest of the squad followed behind as he cut his way back out of the howling mob of Xenos beasts.
Brothers, he voxed, we have been deceived. The bastion is in need of our aid. We must fly to the true battle.
The Orcs were deciding where and how he fought. For that outrage, he vowed to coat the surface of the moon with their blood. Then he opened a channel to the scout squad. Arik was rigging a demolition charge on the hatch when Timur's voice came through on the company vox channel.
Have you found the manufactorum?
The Khan asked.
We have found another potential entrance to it,
Kusala answered.
Six tanks are closing with the bastion. The greenskin's ability to field heavy armor must be neutralized.
Agreed, Ghazan put in.
Brother Sergeant,
Temur said, and the slight aimed at Ghazan was clear.
How close are you to accomplishing the mission?
I don't know, my Khan,
Kusala said.
The lead is promising, but not definitive.
Very well. Carry on. You are more useful to us there. Understand that it may fall to you and your scouts alone to destroy the facility.
Then that is what we shall do.
Good.
Still on the company channel, Temur said,
Stormseer Ghazan, you must return to base. I hope your aid will not be too late in coming.
Ghazan switched to a private frequency. I can best help the struggle here, Temur Khan.
If the entrance has been found, the scouts can do their work. Your work belongs here.
I have no choice in this matter, Ghazan said, and neither do you. He terminated the link. He looked back at Kusala. The sergeant had removed his helmet after leaving the abandoned Orc workshop. He wasn't even trying to hide his doubts now. None of us has a choice now, Ghazan said, as much to convince himself as Kusala. What is coming is destined. Now, open this hatch.